everyone. This is John Jolliffe, and welcome to the next issue of Life. Holiday season. Boy, the holiday season is just around the corner. Have you noticed? Well, as we begin to plan for the holidays, the holiday season, I want you to remember a few things. I want you to remember to create a pleasant atmosphere. That's right. The mood of the host, the mood that is in the host is far more important, if you haven't remembered, it's far more important than the food that's served or the music or entertainment of the evening. The mood of the host. So my tips and my discussion is a discussion about planning for the holiday seasons, planning the atmosphere from the inside out. The inside out. Well, one tip at creating the internal atmosphere that we all desire is to ask yourself a series of questions. Do your own self-analysis, if you will. Ask yourself, how frantic do you become just prior to entertaining? Are you moving around the house at such a frantic breakneck speed? How do you feel about the holidays and entertaining? There's one part of you that says, yes, I'd love to do it. I enjoy that type of entertaining. There's another part of you that just really resents it. Oh, it's just an exhausting experience. Another question would be, how exhausted do you feel after it's all over? After it's all done? Do you ever hear yourself saying, I'm never going to do that again? I want to ask you here, in terms of creating that internal atmosphere, I want you to ask yourself a serious question. Do you realize that all of this exhaustion, all this frantic breakneck pace that you're under, do you realize that there's something at stake here? I mean, there must be. Why would we do this kind of frantic planning, agonizing exhaustion over the holiday season? Buying of gifts, decorating the home, having friends and loved ones over, making sure everything is just right. There must be something at stake. What are we trying to prove? What's at stake for you? What's at risk? Is this a place to prove your self-esteem or some kind of thing? Why are the stakes so high? Then I want you, secondly, I want you to begin the releasing work. I want you to release. You know, whatever you wanted to prove or have happen, can it be bought at a less expensive price, at less of a risk? You know, thirdly, whatever is at risk is where your work begins. The third point to remember is that where you find yourself at risk, what is the price and why is it so high? Whatever that risk is where your work begins. It's the leftover burdens. It's the unfinished business. You know, it's not the holiday parties that exhaust us. It's not the holiday entertainment and all of that frantic breakneck speed we move that we resent. It's the fact that there's so much at risk. Trying to do too much with the holidays is a mistake. You know, you've heard about the holiday cheer. Well, the holiday cheer became associated with drinking because it was one of the ways to release the stress of the holiday season. There's a better way. The better way is to plan your holidays from the inside out, to identify the unfinished business, confront the facts, mourn what wasn't or may never be, and be willing to take your losses up front now and get all that that was or is behind you. Release. Lighten up. Whatever you hope to prove can't be accomplished one evening in the winter. You know, when you think about the holiday seasons, one gets the feeling that if we haven't already begun planning, it may already be too late. Let's talk to Mary. Mary, welcome to the Issues of Life.
Hi.
Hi. Something about holiday charging.
Well, gosh, I'm so nervous. It's not that. It's just that holidays are depressing because of my situation. My husband and I both have bankruptcies on our record, so we can't charge anything. And last year, we hardly had any gifts to give our kids because we bought on cash. But this year, I was a lot smarter, and I started a lot earlier, and I bought things as I had time and money. But his family has always had big Christmases, charged a lot, and then paid it off during the year, and I just can't do that. And it just puts such a damper on me that I really have a hard time getting through it.
And how did you get into bankruptcy? Was it based upon charging so much?
Yeah, it was.
So much indebtedness?
Too much in debt, and we couldn't make it.
And so son took after father and mother and did the charging as they had done.
Right.
So charging becomes kind of a form of medication, doesn't it?
It does for him. Every time he gets stressed, he goes out and buys something.
Uh-huh. And that led to the bankruptcy.
Right.
You saw it coming.
Yes, I did. I was working two jobs, and I was thinking about taking a third, and I just said, I can't do this anymore. And
okay.
So that's when we filed for bankruptcy. But
and, yeah, and did you, how much did you participate in the charging?
I didn't charge anything, but I did not stop him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he always, well,
no,
he,
no, no, say it.
Mm-hmm. He talked to me so sweetly and nicely and said, oh, you know, we really need this. And I knew that we didn't really need it, but I just went along with it. I didn't actively say no.
Yeah, you're an accomplice.
Yeah,
okay.
I am.
Okay. Well, charging is medicating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, they rationalize it in any number of ways, but it's medicating. Not having enough to give. I mean, that's what I hear you saying,
uh-huh.
is that everybody's going to be giving something and we don't have enough to give.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel as though what the world is doing in terms of this competitive giving, you know, how many times people have said, well, let's just keep this package under the tree in case somebody comes by that either we forgot or somebody gives us something, at least we won't be embarrassed that we don't have something to give them back. You know,
yeah.
Those, my friend, those are not gifts. Gifts are not something you give when you don't need it. It's kind of like, what was that statement that someone, I think George Carlin once said? Here, do you want this? He's talking about the refrigerator. Do you want this? If you don't, I'm going to throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a gift, you know? That's
right.
Something that's almost garbage.
Right.
Well, this kind of giving that we do is so competitive. It's so let's cover our tracks kind of giving. It's not from the heart. It's from the self-esteem, or it's from the who's going to love me now variety.
Right.
That would you agree that what the world is doing in terms of this kind of giving is,
oh, sure.
is correct?
Yes.
Is it correct?
No.
It's not correct.
No, it's not.
All right.
That's what happens, but it's not correct.
Okay. Well, how are we ever going to change it? How are we ever going to get back to the more fundamental principles? You know, the Bible says a very interesting statement. It's a very interesting statement that needs to be understood. It says, owe no man nothing or anything
mm-hmm.
but to love one another. So many people go through their lives, I believe, feeling that they haven't done enough, haven't given enough, that what they have given or what they have done is not enough. And so we try to make up for it by charging, by giving, by, well, not really giving, but by buying. You know, rapport.
Right, right.
How are we ever going to change that trend if it doesn't start with you,
mm-hmm.
if it doesn't start with me?
Yeah.
You see, there's a part of you that knows that. There's another big emotional part of you that ignores that.
Mm-hmm.
And that big emotional part is the part that you need to focus on. Your head says one thing. It's not always important to be giving all these neurotic kind of gift giving. It's not important to do that. You know, it's what we've been doing the other 363 days of the year. It makes more mm-hmm. difference than we do this one day. There's the part of you that understands that, the healthy part.
Right.
There's the other part, some of that emotional part, that says what? They won't love me if I don't?
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to think of us if we don't mm-hmm. continue to compete or give as much as we get?
Right.
What does it say? What are the words?
Of my feelings?
Yes.
I'll feel like a failure. I'll feel like I'm not good enough. That's a problem of mine all the time, is not feeling good enough. And if I can't give gifts that keep up with what everybody else is giving, that I don't fit in anymore.
All right. That's how it expresses that one day, or maybe that 30-day period,
mm-hmm.
or maybe 60 or 70 days in advance of that, you start worrying about that.
Mm-hmm.
But how does that low self-esteem show itself the other 9 months a year, the other 10 months a year? How does that low self-esteem express itself then? Because that same issue of your low self-esteem and what you have to do and what you can't do and all of that conflict is there throughout the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
It just expresses itself differently at different seasons.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So do you know how it expresses itself other times? Probably going along to get along, not standing up and saying, wait a minute, we're already over our heads in charge cards and indebtedness. You can't have it. I know how badly you want it, but you can't have it. You have a hard time saying no.
Exactly.
All right.
I've been working on that lately, and just last week I was telling my husband, no, we just can't do this. He was so mad at me, and he was so upset, and I felt so bad that, you know, I just said we can't.
But you feel very bad for yourself. Not feeling bad for him.
Yeah.
You're feeling bad for yourself because you know if he says he's so upset and he's angry or whatever, he might reject you. That's the feeling. He may not love you anymore. You might lose something in relationship with him.
Right.
Okay. But you see, you'll always be in debt if you're not able to work through that low self-esteem. Do you know where it came from? Do you know some of the history of that? Because if you do, you need to start working on that. It's not a problem of the holiday seasons. It's a problem throughout the whole year.
Yeah, it is.
Do you see the point?
Uh-huh.
Are you in counseling now? Are you working on that actively? Do you have a plan to work on that?
No, I'm not in counseling. I just know that it's a problem.
Okay. And it may be difficult this time to because you're so in debt and because of the financial pressures.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things that probably you could do. I hate to recommend books because I think the books don't confront you the way another human being would. Let's talk off the air and let's brainstorm a few ideas, okay?
Okay.
Stay on the line. Mary and I talked about several different things. Certainly doing a family, kind of a family map, trying to find where some of this insecurity came from, some of the feelings surrounding what led to the insecurity, is helpful in identifying some of the other emotions, not just the fear and trepidation that oftentimes is so prominent in somebody who lacks security, but some of the other stronger emotions that that you can find inside. People with low self-esteem or feel insecure tend to identify with weak feelings, fear, frightened, intimidated. They tend to identify with those. But the things that led up to having low self-esteem are oftentimes those feelings are also very strong feelings as well. It's nice for a person who struggles with low self-esteem or insecurity to start feeling strong feelings as well, like anger or resentment. Those kinds of feelings make us begin feeling strong as well. And strength begets strength. And if you can put it in its proper place, you know, one of the things, again, the Bible talks about is be angry, but sin not. So anger and some of those feelings are appropriate to feel. It just depends on how you direct it and who you direct it to and how you go about it. But I told her to identify with some of the misplaced feelings that led to this point where she feels doubtful and low self-esteem and can't stand up for herself to protect her family's financial interest. She knows one thing. She knows that what her husband was about was wrong, and yet she wasn't strong enough, confident enough. She didn't identify with the stronger feelings inside to say, no, I'm sorry, no matter how much you want it, no matter if you cry and complain or kick and scream, it's no, we can't. I also mentioned a book to her entitled Janet Kungo, Finding Inner Security. Finding Inner Security. And with such a low budget also, and probably no budget at all, I also recommended you look into the university systems. Look for maybe a church or for a college or university that has a training program that they have interns. Interns are very good, many of them, depending on their education, their life experience, and you oftentimes can find low-fee or no-fee therapy in that particular place. Certainly better than nothing at all, isn't it? Are you planning your holidays? Are you planning your holiday festivities, or are they planning you? You know, I like January 2nd in particular, because that week following the advent of the new year, it permits us to reevaluate how we have just spent the last, say, 30 days or so, Did we get our fair share of invitations? Did we celebrate the season the way we wished, with whom we wished? You know, there are many of you out there with divided families, and family times together can be, as I said, a mixed bag. You have to cover so many areas, do so many different things. And are you going to do it the same way this year as you did it last? And remember how you felt about it last year? You either were happy about it or you were unhappy about it, and you determined to make a change. If you were happy with the way you celebrated the holidays and the festivities and the times together with family and friends, then you'll hope to repeat. If you're one of those who did not enjoy the times with family, friends, the shopping, the frenzy, and all of that, then be careful. You may be doing it again. Some of you, your tradition of the holidays is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing, and you'd like to give it and in some way bequeath it to your children. Pass it on as a living memorial to how you spend holiday times around the family or around the fireplace, reading and decorating and worshiping. And maybe it's something you pass on down through the generations. It's a wonderful thing to remember. Others of you, you don't have those kinds of happy, wonderful traditions. And so rather than just repeat the old, or rather than just giving up on having any tradition at all, why not begin creating your own tradition? This year, yes, right now. It's not too late. Create your own tradition. It's like anything else. If your life is not fulfilling you, then why don't you plan? Plan your life and then live it as you plan. You know, when you don't know any better, you don't do any better than you know. Let's talk to Diana. Is it Diane?
Yes, Diana.
Diana.
Yes.
Welcome to the holidays.
Hi.
Hi.
I would like to know, this is not just a Christmas thing. This is a year-long thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in counseling for about 2 years, and my husband just started counseling for the past 6-7 months. And I really battle, because I am the passive person, people-pleaser person. I battle the trying to keep my mother-in-law happy and playing on a lot of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Please refresh my mind.
Excuse me for a second.
About guilt.
Excuse me for a second. You say you're the passive person.
Yeah.
But the person who tries to please everybody else is anything but passive.
Really?
Oh, geez. Don't you know how much work that is?
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, really, tell you about it. So where do you get the idea that you're so passive?
Well, I always used to let everybody have their way and tried to please them in every way I could.
Mm-hmm. You're placating.
Yeah.
Placating is not a passive action.
Really?
No.
Well, I always thought I was a passive person.
Now, maybe in the sense that you don't take affirmative action for your own best interests.
Hmm.
Maybe in that sense we could say you're passive, but you're anything but lazy or passive. I mean, you're oftentimes exhausted, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay, well, then that tells you you're not passive. You're just not taking affirmative action on your own best interest.
Mm.
Okay?
Learn something new.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what we're here for, right? Okay, now, guilt, you wanted to have that redefined?
Yes.
Okay. Guilt is the anger. It's interesting, we were just talking about this today in the office. There's a big difference between remorse and guilt. Now, we typically think of guilt as, I'm sorry for what I did. I didn't do what I said, and therefore I feel guilty. I don't think that's the way I conceive of it. Guilt is really anger that we have towards somebody else that we don't tell them.
That's good.
And therefore we feel remorseful about that fact. But we have a lot of anger at them. We may not even feel remorseful because we're just angry, but we won't admit it. So it's really directed at other people, not at ourselves, because the anger you direct at yourself is depression. Now, remorse is, I didn't do what I said I was going to do, and I feel remorseful. But guilt is anger.
That makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
I guess because I feel guilty sometimes that my mother-in-law doesn't understand that this family is going through changes
mm-hmm.
because of its dysfunction in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And she isolates herself from everyone and expects the family to come into her.
Mm-hmm.
And when no one comes to visit her, to call her,
mm-hmm.
she calls us and says, gee, you don't call me.
Mm-hmm.
How come you don't call me? I don't even know who my grandchildren
are.
Well,
one of the reasons you don't call her with any frequency is because you get, in some way, you're not free to do as you wish.
Right.
You're still affected by what she's thinking about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're still allowing, not her, but you're allowing what you need from her to control you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is it you need from her?
For her to understand.
Okay, you need her to understand.
We're a family over here going through our own changes.
You need her to be appreciative and in some way encourage. You need her to understand, approve, encourage what you're going through.
Oh.
All those needs cause you conflict with her.
Hmm.
So what you're controlled by is the need that you have for her. Now,
so
she may
what
be
do I do? Drop the need?
Why not?
That's good.
I mean, why not? I mean, it doesn't mean that you don't have to have that need fulfilled, but you don't necessarily arbitrarily have to have it fulfilled by her.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's the reason you don't call her. And you don't go over and see her is because you're still controlled by what you need from her. So I'll tell you a good reason to go over and visit with her and to call her every once in a while. You know what the good reason is?
What?
To measure your progress.
How would she be able to measure my progress or me?
Oh, we're back to her? We're back to her? No, for you to measure your own progress, are you still controlled by what you need from her? Did I hear it?
Yeah, I don't like that part about me that has...
There you go. Now we're back to you, and that's a good place to be. Because before you were saying, I don't like that about her.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't fulfill that need. She doesn't give me what I want. I don't like her, so I'm not going to call her. It's what you don't like about yourself that causes you not to call her.
So if I don't have that need from her,
right,
then it frees me to call her.
Yes, why don't you just let her be herself?
And
therefore, the reason to call her is to measure how well you're doing with yourself.
That's good. That makes sense.
Because when she says, I never get to see my grandkids, and I'm going to die before, you know, I get to see them again, and, you know, all those things, right?
And we're only 10 minutes away, yeah.
Yeah, you're only 10 minutes away.
We hear it
you
all
can,
the time.
Yeah, you can hear all the things that you've heard before,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have to affect you because you don't need anything from her. You can still, and you can comment back to her, kinder comments. Oh, well, we'll come by. Why don't we go get hamburgers or pizza? Do you want to go with us, get pizza and hamburgers? And when you're not affected by her, she might see more of you.
Because
you're not going to be so affected.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Sure it does.
I couldn't figure out why I was affected by her.
Well, now you take that insight and you call me back and let me know how the holidays go differently this year.
Oh, that sounds good. It sounds too simple, too.
Mm-hmm. Gospel always is.
Okay.
Flesh out the old and in with the new. Okay.
Okay. Diane. Thank you, Don.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy holidays. All right. Let's talk to Wendy. Wendy, welcome to The Issues.
Hello.
How can I help you, Wendy?
Oh, I was calling. It's funny. My husband called me from his car when Diane called about her mother-in-law because he thought it was me using an alias.
Well, no, you're not using an alias.
No, this is me. I've been threatening to call for my mother-in-law for years, and when it comes to holidays, just like she said, it gets just much more intense, and I could lay on your couch from now to kingdom come and still not understand my mother-in-law, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But
did you find it interesting, Wendy, that I was talking less about mother-in-law and more about Diana?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What?
So we don't have to understand mother-in-law to a great extent as long as we understand the Wendy.
Right.
Yeah.
She, my mother-in-law is just, she's just sour and bitter and manipulating, and it's just real sad. I mean, she's got a real nice side to her, but it rarely shows.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to holidays, when it comes to anything, she's just so manipulating. It has to be exactly her way, and she and her husband divorced, and they're remarried, and then I have my parents, and there's so many families to see around holidays.
Mm-hmm.
We can't spend every one on the exact day with
mm-hmm.
her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have a lot of families, there's only one at Christmas Eve.
Right.
Yeah.
So we just came to the conclusion that the night before Christmas Eve, she'll spend the night, and then Christmas Eve morning, we'll have our Christmas with her. Mm-hmm. But nothing is good enough for her. And this year, we just said, that's it. We can't do it all. We've got a family of five, mm-hmm. us personally. And I said, you know, we just can't do it all. So this is just the way it's going to have to be.
And her response?
Well, she calls 2-3-4 times a week now complaining that she's not going to see us on Christmas and no one loves her and what if she's not here next year. And
mm-hmm. Very childlike.
Yeah, and it's mm-hmm. just always that way. And so we just say, well, that's just the way it's going to have to be. Mm-hmm. But is there some way to get over her calling me and whining?
mm-hmm. That's not your mother-in-law in the background, is it?
No, it's my one-year-old.
Oh, your one-year-old, okay. I wondered about that. What your question is?
I don't.
Is there any way you can do what without?
I don't know. I mean, is there any way? I don't know. I don't know. She frustrates me so much. I have to hear her call and whine forever now, because we're not going to see her on the holiday. And before each holiday starts, she'll start in summer talking about, well, who's going to get to see you this Christmas? Well, I don't ever get to see you. She's our closest relative, you know, mother-in-law. We see her 2-3 times a month. She spends the night.
Mm-hmm.
We see her more than anyone else, and still I have to listen to her whine and complain all the time.
Why not to put it in the frame it in the form of disappointment? Okay, acknowledge that you hear her disappointment. Oh, mother, I hear your disappointment. We're disappointed too. But you know, I think we're going to get through it. Okay. Listen. By the way, what are you doing with or how is? You see what I mean? Acknowledge her disappointment. Don't live there in the acknowledgement, but just acknowledge it. She's disappointed, you're disappointed, or whatever, and move on. And if she comes back saying, Mother, I hear your disappointment, we're going to all live through that. Listen, I've got to go. I've got some things going on and things like that. And you get off the line. You don't continue to sit on the line. If we sit on the line, it's because we're afraid of, or...
Well, usually she hangs up on me. That is similar to what I say, and she hangs up on me. And
okay.
If she's at our house, she runs and slams the door and drives home.
Okay, that's her style. You know, I have a couple of friends of mine, very, very kind of strange kind of behavior, telephone behavior. One friend of mine, when you call, he never answers. He just picks up the phone. He never says hello. Okay, he never says hello.
Uh-huh.
And then I have another friend who never says goodbye. He just hangs up. And when he's, like, finished, he just hangs up.
Uh-huh.
And it's been that way since high school. I mean, I love it. I think it's a wonderful, a wonderful mosaic of personalities. And that's your mother's style. Your mother-in-law's style is to, if you tell her what you're really thinking and feeling, she hangs up. Okay, as long as you don't have a lot of needs and don't feel affected by that and you're not a target, that's just the way she says goodbye. And if you're not affected... Then
the kids are. I'm not. But they say, how come Grandma's always so mean? How come Grandma's always running out the door? How come Grandma's always screaming? How come, you know?
I would say she's not so mean. That's just the way Grandmother is. Some grandmothers are that way. I mean, your grandmother is that way. But just make sure that you don't personalize it, because it's something going on in Grandma, and we just have to accept Grandma that way, because we can't change people. We can't change Grandma. We can't change other people.
Okay, so
it's a good... It's a good object lesson for children, for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can't get your one-year-old to talk to me on the phone, can we? Maureen?
Yeah, hi, John.
Hi.
I'm married, and I have three young kids. And every year when Christmas comes around, it seems like it's getting worse and worse every year with the depression for me, because my husband and I have such different traditions, we have different cultures, and every year when he goes to his family's house on Christmas Eve and I go to my family's house, and I sort of feel like the mistress, you know, that never has the man on the holidays,
mm-hmm.
that he's with his real family then, I've got the kids.
Hmm.
And I don't know, it's been really depressing. And I was wondering if you had any ideas on how we could solve this.
Well, what culture are we talking about?
Oh, he's Hispanic and I'm American.
Uh-huh. And they don't celebrate Christmas?
They do, but in quite a different way than I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
They get together and it's a real big party, and it can go on till 3 a.m. or something. And my culture was that we were usually in bed early, and then the next morning was the important time.
Well, are we talking about cultural differences, or are we talking about this as being a convenient stage upon which to play out some kind of drama that's going on between you and your husband? It seems to me that it would be a wonderful thing to be able to share a different culture, cultural experience and expression of their faith in the holidays.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and we do a lot of that, but it...
there's something, obviously, that I'm not hearing here.
Maybe so.
Okay.
I think what it comes down to is I've suggested that every other year, one year we'll spend New Year's Eve with his family, and one year... And I don't really even get together so much with my family, but maybe even just do something with the kids at home, you know, that's special for them.
Okay.
What happens at the parties is that the kids tend to get so rambunctious and it gets so crazy, and there's no spiritualness at all to, you know, to this holiday. It seems, and the next day people are either hungover or too tired or, you know, and it's not what I'm used to or what I like at all.
Does your husband drink, and that causes a problem in your relationship?
Yeah.
And is he hungover the next day?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. 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 I would think that that's part of it.
That's a large part of it.
Yeah, it's a large part of it, yeah. I wouldn't think just because his family may not be express their faith the way you do, mm-hmm. that because it's not the spiritual festival or a holiday period or that one particular day, I think that you could probably live with that if it weren't for the next day. I guess the next day following, for instance, with our family, this is the way we do it. Christmas Eve we spend with friends, and we spend it differently, and then the Christmas Day we spend with the family. So we divide our holiday time like that. And of course, we've had plenty of time before Christmas Eve to be with our friends and other friends and attend church and do all the kinds of things we want to do. Now, what I'm hearing you say is not just that Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, but probably the relationship you have with him, not just as during this holiday time, although the holiday time does seem to exacerbate or bring to the front all the conflicts that you have in your interpersonal relationships. But it sounds like the relationship you have with him is not a cooperative relationship.
Well, it seems like we do pretty well throughout the year. But when it comes to Christmas...
So what does he say to you when you say, let's do, Christmas Day with his family? Is that the tradition?
No, Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve with your family, his family.
Mm-hmm.
What about doing Christmas Day with your children and your family?
Well, usually then by the next day, though, everyone is so tired, they've been out so late. What I have done in the past is I'll stay until like 10 or 11 with the kids, and then I go home, but he stays.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm coming home, driving up, walking into the house, at a time where when I was a kid, I was always with my whole family,
mm-hmm.
and my husband's never there.
Mm-hmm.
He always comes home later, and not necessarily always after been drinking or not, but...
Mm-hmm.
But his family takes precedence at that time because that's what they've always done.
And you've explained all this to him?
Yeah.
And
we've had more than one.
And what does he say to you?
Well, this year he surprised me and he told me that we were going to do it together. I guess I just don't really believe it yet. I'm not sure whether or not I can believe it because it's been such a pain to me to have that.
So this year he's going to do it together?
Yeah. Well, we were thinking about going to a church or something, or just try to start a tradition for our own kids.
All right.
We don't have any tradition.
Okay, so he's listening.
For
whatever reason, he's listening, it sounds like.
Yeah.
All right, well, make some plans, make some special kind of things for him to look forward to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that he gets enough of the benefit of doing something different, that there's enough goodies and rewards, so that it might cause him to think twice next time, so that he'll have something to look back onto that'll be different and special.
Okay, that sounds good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like teaching it's like the old dog and the new tricks.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can teach any old dog something new as long as you make the rewards big enough.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of nervous because the family's putting pressure on already, and he's told them no, but, You know, they every time they see me, they kind of, you know.
Just send him a little card or a little something special and just let him know, and maybe the children write a little note, just to let him know how much you appreciate the fact that this year you're going to spend time together as a family, so that he'll know that there's somebody going to be disappointed if he gives in to the pressure of seeing his family.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if the pressure gets too great, what you might do, if he becomes, if he feels like he's between a rock and a hard place, mm-hmm. you might say, all right, if, and this is only the very end, don't suggest this too soon, mm-hmm. but if at the very end he's just saying, I've got to go, I'm sorry, I got to go, rather than make a conflict over it, why not just say, I'll agree to go with you, but we have to leave by a certain time, and make it early,
uh-huh.
so that we can have that early evening together, maybe 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at the latest, and you come home together. Agree with me on that, you must ask, you
uh-huh.
see, so that you can begin having that more and more of that time the next day that you're used to as your own childhood. Okay?
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot.
Good deal.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, much of life is accommodation, rewarding and being grateful for and talking about and planting seeds. You don't know that maybe you're like Maureen. Maybe you're facing something like she's facing this year. And plant the seeds one more time or water the seeds again. You don't know when they're going to take harvest, but there will be a harvest at some point. You just have to be patient and try to negotiate. And if somebody's willing to try something brand new, make sure that they're rewarded for that. Make sure that they have enough goodies in doing something brand new that they might look back and say, gee, you know, that really was different. That was fun. Debbie, welcome to the Issues of Life.
Hi.
Hi, Debbie.
Christmas is, the topic of holidays is all coming up now,
Yes.
And I'm having my in-laws visiting this weekend, and I know it's going to come up about us visiting them at Christmas time, because essentially it is their turn this year. And I dread the thought of having Christmas there, and I don't know if, I feel like this is kind of a selfish thought, and I guess I want to hear your opinion on it. And it's because my in-laws kind of view Christmas as just like another day, and I was raised with it being really special and lots of different things that go into it, you know, and they view it as you know, the family being together and having dinner together, and that's really neat, and I view it that way too, but over and above that, my family has made a special effort in it.
Okay, let me suggest something to you.
Uh-huh.
You're a Christian?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a very special day for you,
mm-hmm.
and you like to have people share in that special time. Let me ask you to rely upon some insight that you operate with every day of your life, and let's see if we can apply it to that Christmas day that you spend with your in-laws. Now, you know they're not going to go away, and neither is Christmas.
Well, I don't have to spend it with them.
You don't?
No, it is their turn.
All right.
But I could just, you know, kind of weasel out of it a little bit.
You could do it. Well, I mean, a little bit. I mean,
I could weasel out the fact that we'd spend actually Christmas Day, and then that way we could actually have a celebration that's something of the same nature that
What is the invitation? To spend all day Christmas Day?
No, actually, to spend days up there.
Oh, several days.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and alike.
Probably within the whole season of it all. And now that we have a son, I really am
I understand. Well, how could you weasel out of it a bit? Are you suggesting one day versus another, not the whole Christmas season?
Well, I would probably... just try to see if we could go up afterwards. But I don't know I don't want to hurt their feelings, because they are the way they are, and that's just the way they're comfortable with
it. And how often do they get their turn? Is it every other year, or is it every 3 years or so?
Well, one, you know, set gets Thanksgiving, and the other set gets Christmas. And
they alternate every year?
Yeah, we're supposed to. But.
And how far are they from home?
Oh, not too far, just about 3 hours.
Oh, 3 hours?
Yeah.
And they want you to come up there and stay there?
Yeah.
For 3 days?
Yeah. a give or take or two, but they're really relaxed type people that, you know, if whatever's best for us is kind of their opinion.
Oh, so you could go up there for the day.
Yeah, and I could not even, we could even skip out on Christmas Day, but I don't want to have that hurt them.
What about a compromise? Why don't you reach a compromise? It's every other year. Why don't you reach a compromise?
Yeah, it is every other year at this point, and we have spent it up there, not last year, but the year afterwards.
Why don't you reach a compromise, Debbie?
Pardon?
Well, you were depressed because you didn't reach a compromise. You spent three long days, perhaps. Why don't you reach a compromise? Now, what would a compromise be? It's every other year. What's a compromise for you? When those every other years come, what could you do?
But how awful. I mean, I don't even want to compromise 1 year away from something really fun and exciting.
Wait a minute. No. Every other year, you have to come up with a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying compromise every other year. I'm saying every other year when you're confronted with the invitation to go up there for Christmas, reach a compromise for that period. And what would the compromise be? Think this through.
I think it would probably be that we would just not have the celebrations like I'm used to.
Yeah, but you're not thinking in terms of compromise. You're just thinking in terms of loss.
Right, that's a major loss.
What would the compromise be every other year? In those, there's two or three days there, isn't there?
At least, or maybe more.
More, okay. But how could you go there, celebrate family time, dinner time, whatever it represents, that time of year, mm-hmm. to them, but still retain some of the value for you? How could you compromise every other year?
I don't know. Do you have any suggestions?
Sure I do, but I want you to think. I want you to think more in terms of just losing. I want you to think in terms of compromise.
I guess what I could do is just bring up the stockings and bring up all the frivolity, you know, kind of stuff. But it hurts me to see them not be excited about, like my mom, my parents are, you know, they're excited.
But let me show you something, Debbie. You know, every day of your life, you are surrounded by people who do not believe and do not feel and are not excited about the same things that you're excited about.
Right.
Whether it's theological, psychological, or whatever. Pick
right.
your subject. You don't isolate yourself from these people, do you?
No, but at Christmas time, it could be very depressing. Don't you think so?
It is what you make it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't know how to...
I've got some bad news for you. Bad news for you. I don't think you could prove that Jesus Christ was born on the 25th of December.
I know
that, right? Right?
I know. So what you're saying is maybe we can have Christmas here before we leave.
You can have Christmas any day you wish to worship the, you know, what you believe in the Savior. You can do that any day of the year. What I was going to suggest is that perhaps it's every other year, perhaps if they're that flexible, you could go up for Christmas Eve, come home for Christmas Day, or go up Christmas Day and have Christmas Eve and the opening of gifts and the celebration around your home on Christmas morning, and then after that morning, in the afternoon, drive up, stay Christmas, the balance of Christmas Day, over Christmas Day to the next day, and spend that time up there. It's just every other year. You could reach a compromise in doing something like that, couldn't you? This is John Jolliffe, and I was talking to Debbie, and it was interesting. Debbie, you didn't get a chance to hear this. I was talking to Debbie, and I had made that recommendation about spend Christmas home with your family and, you know, with your parents and your family. Open gifts, do the celebrating that you enjoy, and then say you're on 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock on Christmas Day morning. Drive up to your in-laws and spend that day, the balance of Christmas Day, and maybe overnight and a couple of days with them. And let that be the compromise, and it's just every other year. And she said, I think that's a great idea. Well, that was the second time I suggested it. The first time, she didn't hear me. And I said, Debbie, let me explain something to you. Your attitude, the boundaries that you have established, are so rigid. You're so apprehensive about somebody taking things away from you that you truly enjoy, like the celebration of Christmas, that you didn't even hear another option, another suggestion. Your boundaries were not flexible enough to entertain that this could be worked out. You were so certain that you were just going to have to give up Christmas every other year that you enjoyed so much. So be flexible. Find the options. Look at your boundaries and see if they're not maybe too rigid. Nancy?
Hi, John.
Hi, Nancy.
Thanks to the Issues of Life, I've been in therapy for the
past 4 weeks looking at some family of origin type issues, and my question for you today is whether or not the challenge to be myself with my family over the holidays is really worth it.
The challenge to be my real self or false
exactly.
self?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
You can be the false self, right?
What was that?
You can be the false self.
Yeah, I've done that for 30 years.
And what is the false self?
Oh, well, my role in the family is sort of, you know, keeping things wonderful for everyone all the time and not rocking the boat. And my family all meets at my house for Christmas. And last year, I just about collapsed after Christmas was over from the total mental and physical exhaustion of trying so hard to please and gain their acceptance and approval. And it's like, you know, that's... They're never going to accept or approve anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened this morning is my sister called, typically, the way she always does, to let me know that she would be leaving her house from Orange County. She'd be leaving around noon. So that means she'll be showing up here around 2 or 3, missing breakfast, missing opening the presents. And so what I would normally do is, like, rearrange the whole day to accommodate her or whatever, or, and tell her that was fine, that we would work it all out. And instead of doing that, this time I told her that I was really disappointed and that, you know, it seemed like there was always something that was more important than being with her family.
Mm-hmm.
And she got real upset. She ended up slamming the phone down in my ear. She hung up on me. And, you know,
she's punishing you for changing.
Pardon me?
She's punishing you for being different.
Exactly. And that's what the therapist just told me this week, that typically the response of the family of a person that is growing up emotionally
uh-huh.
is change back. We like you better the old way.
We'll make it so difficult for you to be new or to be different. Oh, you see? The price that you have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But see, if it didn't have such a price, it wouldn't be worth it. If it was just simple and easy, we wouldn't really call it success.
Well, I've finally gotten to the point where I recognize that the cost of not being myself is definitely not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want so desperately to make, we have a 2-year-old, she's our first child, and I want Christmas to be a Christian, you know, loving, harmonious memory in her heart.
Tradition.
I want to make a memory for this child, and there's so much family tension flying around,
okay.
and none of my family are Christians. And it's just so hard to be ourselves around them.
Now,
not
does,
only
does anybody have to? Does anybody have to change? Does your sister have to come early to do it your way? Do they have to think and feel about this holiday season the way you do?
No, but I just wanted to admit. I just wanted to cop up to the fact that I was disappointed. I told her, "Okay, well, that's fine, but you will be missing breakfast and opening the presents."
Okay. Now, in your healing, as you continue, you're growing. You will answer my question and just say no. Not with a no but.
Say that again?
All right. My question was, does anybody have to change for you? Do they have to do it your way? Do they have to feel about Christmas and Christ and all of that stuff? Do they have to feel the way you feel? When you grow a little more, your answer will be no.
I see.
And not a no but. You see, because behind the butt is all this defensiveness and all this, yeah, but I want you to understand my motives and I want you to understand what I want. And I want to,
right.
That stuff gets you into a drama with them.
So
all you need to do is express what you would like and express your disappointment. You don't have to make that make sense. You don't have to apologize for what you think and feel.
Mm-hmm.
You just say it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they want to get into some drama with you and argue the point endlessly and defend themselves, you don't get sucked into that, do you?
Okay.
Not when you get a little more mature, a little more confident that what you think and feel is just as valid as what they think and believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when she slammed down the phone in my ear for expressing the way I felt,
yeah.
I just felt like, see, I'm really not allowed to feel the way I feel. And now, you know, then I left the house and she called.
Oh, but see, hold on. Wait, let me back up just a moment.
Uh-huh.
That childlike belief that says, I'm not allowed to think and feel the way I think and feel, is still childlike because it really says that I'm not allowed unless I'm given permission.
Uh-huh.
I can't stay up and watch TV. I can't come in at 11:30 or 12 unless I'm my mom and dad tell me I can. I can't do anything unless somebody gives me the permission. But as you grow up, and as you now are a woman yourself with a family of your own, you don't have to ask your sister or mom or dad's permission to stay up and watch the Late Late Show, or to go and come as you wish, or to believe in what you believe. You're a person in your own right.
I see.
So the only person holding you back now is?
Myself.
Exactly. That little part of you that still wants everybody to agree and give you permission.
Uh-huh.
So when she slams down the phone, you say to her, yourself, oh, I see. She doesn't want me to do what I want to do, and she won't allow me to express my thoughts and feelings. But you know something? I don't need her permission. I'm allowing myself to disagree with her.
Mm.
And I can now see who owns the greater problem.
Mm-hmm. And so when she calls back, which she should be doing this afternoon.
Okay.
What then?
What then? What does the mature part of you say? How does the mature part act?
Oh, gosh.
Does the mature part become apprehensive that someone's going to call and take away my freedom and not give me the permission?
Well, see, I would really like to let her know that I didn't appreciate being hung up on.
Okay. Okay.
Is that more defense?
No, it's sharing your thoughts and feelings. I didn't, Carolyn, whatever her name is. Carolyn?
Me?
You? No, I'm speaking to your sister.
Oh, Dee.
Well, okay, Dee. Dee, I sensed that you were very angry with me today as you hung up the phone the other day. Are you feeling any better about it? I mean, I don't understand why you did that. Maybe you could explain. But you're not looking for her to, in some way, tell you that what you said and thought, you're not looking for her to say, gee, you know, I thought it over and you're really being reasonable. And I think Nancy, what you want to do is just fine. And I think everything you told me is probably right on. And
well, see, that's my role in the family to tell her that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But when you do that, you're doing it for a reason, right? To appease,
yes.
To compromise,
right.
To keep peace at any price, to go along to get along.
Uh-huh.
And when you keep doing that, you start eroding what it is that you really think and feel.
And that's
what you really think and feel is not what you're saying.
Out of.
That's right. What you really think and feel is not what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel so appeasing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can turn your cheek, but you can still utter the same feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Turn the cheek, but still keep your perspective. And don't lose yourself. And if you lose your perspective, and if you lose what it is that you were looking for and having a new tradition for your home and family, you know, you've only got one person to blame.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So why blame her? Get ahead.
Okay, John.
Okay.
Merry Christmas, and thank you again for that wonderful referral service.
Interesting to listen, if you're listening quietly and carefully, listening to all the rationalizations surrounding the purchasing of Christmas trees, packaging, you know, buying gifts, card buying, gift giving, party attending. I mean, I think it's also very interesting, don't you? I mean, it's an analyst's fantasy land. Holiday habits. I mean, somebody was telling me the other day that with the cost of Christmas trees rising and rising and rising, the better way to look at the cost is it's like an expensive plant that you keep around for perhaps 2 weeks to a month. Interesting. All the rationalizations about doing the same thing we did last year, doing it again. One person I was talking to showed me a card that they'd been sent. They received a card, a Christmas card, but the person only signed it. Just kind of on the bottom there was just a little signature. I mean, this person had meant a lot to this person, and yet what was on the card? Just a little signature. I mean, the person who sent that put more energy in addressing the card than in some special message or anything. I mean, just send me the envelope. I mean, put the return address on it. I'll know who it's from, but save yourself the expense of purchasing the card. I mean, if you're not going to say anything, I mean, if you're not going to say anything personal, I mean, I've got all the traditional Christmas messages memorized. Just send me the envelope with the return address, and it'll be done. I mean, you'll get credit. And if you're in the habit of card sending, but you're not likely to send a personal message, but you've just got this card habit that you have to send, well, don't sign it, and then I'll use it next year. Well, you know, there's as many reasons for giving as there are gifts to give. I think the most popular reason that people give gifts is to acknowledge that you have kind thoughts about other people, and the giving of that particular gift is a celebration of that fact. It's a love gift. It's a friend gift. I think the most denied reason is the obligatory giving. The obligatory giving. You know, that happens frequently, too frequently. And what would they think if they didn't receive a gift from us? These obligatory gifts, I think, are one level removed from white elephant gifts. You know, where we inventory for those white elephant parties. I wondered if you also knew that proportionally there are more white elephant parties between January and March than any other time of the year. I mean, you don't need your doctorate to figure that out. I think the most unappreciated gift is the one that we give others who surprise us with their unexpected giving. I mean, you run into the kitchen, you're hoping upon hope that your spouse got a few extra gifts just in case. That's the emotional insurance kind of giving. These are the gifts that are placed in the back of the tree, far enough removed from those special gifts, just so that someone you care about doesn't get one of those insurance gifts by mistake. Come January, those are the gifts, if they're still around, those are the gifts that become the white elephants. Now, I think the most coveted gift that we can ever give another is not a gift at all. Interesting. It's not a gift at all. Borrowing from the Christmas story of Jesus, God became a man, and he gifted us with the presence of his Son. Our presence in someone's life is the ultimate gift. After all, it's not what you give that's remembered after the warranty runs out. It's who is still missing or now present that wasn't this time last year. Give the gift that keeps on giving, or potentially could, your commitment, your love, and your accessibility. Give yourself in personal ways this coming year. Commit to that. And keep your commitment.